Dante Bojo, this is At the Edge of Canada with TJ Phillips, bringing you weekly check-ins with all the major players in the Indigenous intellectual community in southern Manitoba and across the country. This week's show, we keep it in-house at the University of Manitoba, a recent recipient of a Vanier Scholarship and the current holder of a C.D. Howe Memorial Fellowship from the Center for Creative Writing and Oral Culture is PhD student Nick Kosmenko in Applied Health Sciences. His research looks to explore, through sharing circles and yarning, the factors that influence rural Indigenous participation in varsity sports in Manitoba, and also creating culturally relevant narratives or film content with Indigenous athletes. We dig into Nick's research methodologies, the notion of a sharing circle, how it passed ethics, what it's like to be an athlete coming from the North, the difference in training, the difference in approach, the difference in expectation. Nick's research is really cool because I don't know of how many times we've heard of getting students to engage in a sharing or talking circle as a method for drawing out self-awareness about the process of creating elite-level athletes. We talk about the subculture of comparison that happens in social media and in the world of competition. Nick's from the North. He's from Cranberry Portage. He's also a distance runner. This is an interesting look at graduate research going on right here at U of M. And this is Nick Kosmenko on At the Edge of Canada. This is an interesting show for me, Nick, because I study Indigenous sport and Indigenous masculinities through sport and literature. I'm particularly interested in your research. I'm particularly curious about what you have to say, about what you're finding in your talking circles and things like that.
Yeah, well, I haven't done the talking circles yet.
Yeah,
so
what you're going to do, what you're going to do. So let's start there. You've just been awarded this year the C.D. Howe Fellowship for the Center of Creative Writing and Oral Culture, right?
That's right.
Give me the elevator speech about your winning proposal for that fellowship.
That was a long time ago. I forget most of it. But basically, I outlined my research studying rural Indigenous athletes and varsity sport, particularly here in Manitoba. The plan is to do talking circles with youth, so high school age athletes, to kind of get their, so they could share their experiences with me about sport and pursuing sport in their home communities. And then I'm going to do what's called yarning. It's a conversational method, so kind of like a relaxed interview that you allow to wind its way along. I'm going to do that with current Indigenous varsity athletes here at the U of M and alumni of U of M teams as well, Indigenous alumni.
Cool. So when you say rural Indigenous, is there particular communities or regions you're working in?
I haven't figured it out yet. I haven't really defined what I mean by rural, and that's something important that I'm going to have to do. So, yeah, we'll see. That's still in the works.
Okay. Yeah. And when you talk about athletes, is there particular sports, or is it just anybody who has been recruited by or is planning to play for a Canadian collegiate team?
Yeah, so with the youth, it'll be pretty much any sport. But of course, here with the varsity athletes, it's the varsity teams that we have here. Mm-hmm. And if I need to, I might branch out to University of Winnipeg if they let me, and go from there. So,
So why did you think that storytelling and using talking circles and the yarning method, why was that the best way to come to understand these athlete stories?
So I'm taking kind of an Indigenous paradigm approach, or Indigenous research paradigm. So the participants have a lot of control in what we do. So although I say now I'm going to use talking circles and yarning, it could change depending on what the participants want. They are given a lot of control over the research. And of course, you want to do things that are meaningful for them. This is all qualitative stuff, and most of it, a lot of it is based on interviews and just talking to people. So it's kind of a complicated form of talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the best way to just, you know, get information from people or have them share their information is to talk to them, and they can give you deep, rich information that way. With surveys, you don't get that. So I think that's particularly important, and I like interacting with athletes in particular and hearing their stories. So I guess, you know, that's kind of why I chose it. And of course, Talking Circles, it's culturally relevant. It's really cool because unlike focus groups where you can have people all talking at once and then mm-hmm. have to transcribe that after, mm-hmm. Talking Circles, you take turns, right? So, and it's kind of a way to disrupt the hierarchy between maybe researcher and participant, because everyone has a say and everyone's considered equal in a talking circle. And with the yarning, kind of same thing. The person you're talking to, the participant, has so much control over where it goes.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple of questions about how the talking circles are going to look from an administrative position in a bit. But first, I'm curious about what kind of stories do you want to hear? There is a academic development component to this research. You're looking at the ways in which sports facilitate successful students and graduation rates and all of these other elements of producing finished university products. I'm curious about the stories that you want to hear from youth. Is it about development? Is it about journey? Is it about systemic racism? Like, what kind of conversations are you looking for?
Well, I'm hoping to hear everything they're willing to share, and that they have found that's important and significant in their lives, stories that relate to pursuing sports. So that can be like maybe how it helps with school or how it doesn't help with school, because it can be positive, negative. So that's a big thing we're looking for, or I'm looking for, both the positives and the negatives. And that's what you want to do with your research, of course, is not just focus on the negativity. I'm often someone who does that kind of excessively. I'm kind of a negative person that way. But
an inherent cynic makes a good researcher.
Yeah, like I like to attack issues, I guess, and, mm-hmm. and fix things so
okay.
I can understand them.
So sometimes when you're asked in talking circles, I've been a part of many in different regions in this country, and there's always different protocols and procedures. What kind of oversight do you have? Do you have an elder running these talking circles? Is there going to be that kind of architectural component?
There might very well be. I mean, before I started the PhD, I was in the master's here, and I actually dropped out of the master's and applied to the PhD and got in. But when I did my master's...
We'll edit that out, Nick. That you were a graduate school dropout at one point.
Yeah, I'm a grad school dropout. Well, I already had a master's
okay.
degree. It was actually in environmental science, so... I figured, well, things are coming to me quick in this new area of research that I'm doing, this new field, so I might as well, you know, go for something a little bigger. But I had reached the point where I submitted my ethics approval in mm-hmm. my MA. And, one of the things they told me was maybe you should, you know, have a facilitator do these mm-hmm. talking circles. So that's definitely something I'm going to have to look into, depending on, I mean, where I'm working too, because my plan back then was to do one of the talking circles back in my home community
okay.
of Cranberry Portage. And the plan was to coach track and field there, because I'm an alumni of the track team here myself, and kind of build rapport with students that way. But ethics thought there would be kind of a hierarchy, which is definitely a valid point. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about the ways in which these stories can quickly become confessional and private in talking circles, and often that's the sanctity of the circle, is that these stories are meant to stay there. What did ethics have to say to you about wanting to use the talking circle method as a chance to glean researchers? Did they require you to be a little bit more nuanced in your approach or anything like that? Did you get any feedback that way?
Yeah, definitely. I see your point there, and that's definitely something that's going to have to be communicated with people, and they're going to be there with me hopefully every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So anything we say gets double checked with them, and nothing leaves them unless they want it to, or nothing leaves us unless mm-hmm. they want it to.
One of the issues we've seen in the past with Indigenous research is around naming in ethics. Ethics typically doesn't allow you to name, and in Indigenous circles that's often quite important. It's a way of honoring people, is through naming them in stories and naming them for recognition. I would imagine that stories from young athletes, there's a whole network of people that come into play in their development, from coaches to mentors to other players. I was just really curious how ethics was guiding you with that kind of information. with rural Indigenous athletes, and I've worked in youth mentorship sectors myself in coaching and in outreach, and in rural communities especially, the obstacles, not necessarily obstacles, but the context and the situation of being a young developing athlete is particularly unique. There isn't the kind of resources you wish that were there. There's often a lot of travel and money involved. Teams are community-based and nation-based in a lot of situations, especially for Indigenous athletes. I'm really curious about that systemic trend of how to build elite athletes in rural communities. I'm curious of what kind of political stories might come out about that. Have you thought about that at all emerging in your research? As somebody from Cranberry Portage who was a high-level athlete, I'm sure you dealt with your fair share of politics on the road up.
Just make one correction there. Still am a high-level athlete.
Oh, okay, yeah.
No, I'm actually not that good. Talk to my coach and he'll tell you. But with the rural communities, I haven't thought too much about the politics of it yet, but you know, like you said, coming from Cranberry Portage and being a runner, you try to run out there in the wintertime and you're running through sometimes, you know, six inches of snow because the roads don't get plowed that often. Just things like that. It's really challenging. There's no facility. So I've thought about, you know, how do you develop, particularly, you know, since I'm a runner, how would you develop distance runners in this setting? Because I know I missed out on a lot of things. The indoor facility is something we don't have. So you're out there in the winter. You can't really do anything fast or too much quality when there's ice everywhere and snow. And yeah, what about the, you know, not all these communities have coaches like we have here in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. So that's a big thing too, because you definitely want to put, you know, start athletes the right way toward their athletic careers. So, you know, one thing is, maybe training coaches in these communities that already live in these communities to do it with the facilities. I don't know. A lot of what we have to do, I think, is just be creative. I mean, you know, I heard a story someone told me about a runner who lived in one of these rural communities. And what he would do is run up and down the runway of the airport, just up and down, because it was the only place that was plowed. You know, that might drive you crazy, but that's kind of an example of how, you know, you kind of, takes another level of dedication almost, and some creativity to be good at something.
Be really curious to hear what those stories are about how that affected the athlete's perception of their ceiling. I mean, we live in an era right now where you can go on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook and you can see your peer athletes training at incredibly sophisticated ways in high-tech facilities in this country, more so in the States, but in this country especially. What would that do to the psychology of a rural Indigenous athlete who has to run highways? I'd be really curious to hear what that would do to resiliency and perseverance and your own psyche of self-determination. What did you feel when you were in Cranberry Portage, you know, running snowbanks?
Well, I had made the goal of, I started late in high school doing this. I mean, I was a runner since I was 13, but I didn't start competitively until later just to push myself and test myself. And the one goal was to win a medal at a rural provincial meet. And so that excluded Winnipeg at the time. And so you still don't have the high level of competition. Not to say anything, you know, not to say anything bad about these other runners, but Winnipeg presents other opportunities you don't get elsewhere. But I didn't really think about it when I was younger. I just wanted to, you know, I saw it's track, so you see the numbers, and I just trained to hit the numbers, and
you never thought that it could affect your ceiling as an athlete? Like, I can't get an extra tenth of a second on my time because, quite frankly, I don't get to run against resistance training machines or anything like that?
I do now. I didn't back then. Back then, actually, when I moved here to Winnipeg, I thought, well, my training's... I thought the opposite way. I thought my training's going to be limited because I'm moving to the city. I didn't have much experience in Winnipeg.
Interesting. That's
interesting. But, you know, you find out there's tons of running routes around here. It's actually a good city to run in. I think people would say, oh, it's snowy and cold. But, I mean, there's trade-offs to every place you go.
Yeah.
So when I was over in Windsor doing my master's there, you know, it's icy all the time, so, and slush and stuff like that.
But you ever run down at Sandwich Town?
Yeah, I lived there.
Oh, you lived in Sandwich Town. Yeah. Right? Well, it's not far from the campus.
Yeah, Sandwich Tower was where I lived. Yeah,
cool.
2 years.
Yeah, for all our listeners who aren't in the Southern Ontario area, there's a little neighborhood in Windsor called Sandwich Town, and it's right near the university. A lot of students and faculty and staff live there.
Yeah.
And it's right, like, right underneath the Ambassador Bridge. I think you can even see the Stirrets.
Pretty close,
Yeah, pretty close. The Ambassador Bridge that goes over the Detroit River into Detroit, Michigan. Another curious story I would love to hear in these talking circles if it comes up would be the self-awareness of elite-level rural Indigenous athletes. How well did they know their own skill set was maybe a ticket to a big town, an urban setting? Like, what did that do to their psyche in the community? Because I witnessed it. In these communities, there was a segregation between elite level talent and pedestrian talent, and elite level talent was insulated. In your coaching, do you ever see that kind of insulation of elite level talent?
Not really, because with the running, it's something that takes a lot of distance running in particularly. Mm-hmm. My coach says you don't just find a good distance runner on the street. You can find a talented distance runner on the street, but it takes time. And the high school level, not many students have put that time in, especially in North, where running's not a thing. Back home, I'm the guy that runs, and a few other people do it. There's a couple others, but so there's not really too many people at that level, although I believe you can find talent anywhere. And, right now, the North is, I believe, an area that isn't really being tapped into. Being good at a sport can do so much for how you feel about yourself and, training with other athletes and that social circle you build. So
Indigenous athletes in the North may not always find themselves competing in track and field. There's a lot of other opportunities out there and things like maybe hockey or field lacrosse. I'm curious about the athletes you've identified, if you've started that work, who are athletes at the varsity level already. Do you find that Indigenous athletes, rural or urban, are gravitating to certain sports?
That's definitely what you would read is hockey is the big one. And yeah, I would believe that. I think my old high school, they started a hockey academy. I'm not sure how it's going, but it's a big thing. It's for some students, it's their number one thing. It's what they're there for. Then school is, it's just keeping them in school like it did for me, like track did for me throughout my university career. I mean, I wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for that, I don't think. So I definitely say hockey's the big one.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any athletes already identified at UN Manitoba that you'd like to work with?
I got some names in mind, I guess, but no, I'm still identifying a lot of athletes. Before, when I started my MA, it was just going to be, I think, northern Indigenous instead of rural Indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
But rural kind of includes other communities you exclude with northern. And it would include, northern and Indigenous is separate. So it was easy to go through rosters and find out who was from the north. But now that I'm doing rural and Indigenous, it's kind of a little harder because I have to think of what's rural and I'm combining the two. So mm-hmm. the participants have to be rural and Indigenous, not or. So it's takes a little more time. I'm going to have to talk to some of the coaches and get them to help me out with recruiting and stuff like that.
Absolutely. You're based in the Faculty of Kinesiology and Recreation?
Applied Health Sciences, which kinesiology is a unit in Applied mm-hmm. Health Sciences. It's a multidisciplinary faculty, so... Yeah, and that's where I started my MA was Ken.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so who's your advisor?
So my two advisors are Dr. Alicia Strawn and Dr. Joni Hallis.
Dr. Joni Hallis. I'm good friends with Joni.
Yeah.
She's awesome. And what kind of support are they providing you on this journey, on this research pathway with Talking Circles and Indigenous perspectives?
Yeah, I just want to say, first of all, that they've been really great. I know that might help me out when it comes to my comprehensive exams. So get that out of the way right away. They're both very, very helpful. They set the bar for me, And I don't want to say push me because it's not aggressive, but they're definitely putting opportunities out and expect me to do, you know, certain things and expect me to research at a high level and all that. But the thing I really like is, you know, they're open to me doing things differently. At first, well, qualitative research in general is something that's kind of marginalized. It's not, some people don't see it as good or as the quantitative research. Now with indigenous research, it adds a whole new thing. You know, you're not really concerned so much about being rigorous and things like that. You know, the methodology you use is the one where you, through which you best meet your relationship obligations with the community.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if they don't want the research to go out, it doesn't go out.
Mm.
So, yeah, Joni and Leisha are very up to date with that sort of thing. And, yeah, they're really great that way.
So, in your mind, what would be the best ultimate outcome of this research? What kind of difference do you want to make in rural indigenous athletic development, academic success? What's the ultimate best case scenario?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because that's something I've had in mind, I think, for a while now, is not just producing the thesis, but how can we actually make something out of my project? So the details need to be kind of refined. One thing I'm doing, it is, you know, I'm taking this indigenous research paradigm, but I'm trying to use a two-eyed seeing approach to incorporate some of the strengths of Western science as well. So there is a quantitative part that I'm going to be doing, building a survey to schools, hopefully across Canada, so it's not just specific to Manitoba, that they can send out to people, to indigenous, you know, potential students in areas around their university, and ask them, okay, what do you want included in the school environment?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think you can't just place the onus on the sport, because varsity sport, we're so focused on competing at a high level, you know, and the onus shouldn't be placed on sport to make things culturally appropriate and inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a survey to ask people about that. That's one of the products. And also in my proposal to C.D. Howe Memorial Fellowship, I mentioned fictional narratives, or I might use a video that tells the youth stories and tells the varsity athlete stories and the alumni stories. But those are made in conjunction with the youth. They're hopefully going to help me out. And so maybe produce some videos. So I still got to check in to, you know, what do I have to do to get that done? Like, what are the ethics that are involved and things like that? So, and then, you know, there's initiatives going on at this school too, dealing with making things more inclusive. So hopefully my research can contribute to that in as it relates to sports. So.
As for boots on the ground, sort of youth work, you've also been involved with Rec and Read, right?
Oh, just a little bit, yeah. I was volunteering there for a little while. Not a whole lot, though.
My good friend Heather
works
there.
Yeah.
She leads Rec and Read, so I got people I love in both these places. Joni and Heather are wonderful people. But in your limited time at Rec and Read, what did you think was the value of combining academics with sport in that way for youth?
Yeah, and I thought that was great because, you know, I remember in high school we used to get medals that said athletics, the other half of education. So, you know, it's kind of living that. There are many people, you know, they'll say that these other things outside school are important, but you don't really see it, especially in our society. It's always academics. And the athletics is kind of pushed aside, but it's, you know, it reminds me of the concept of wellness and having the spiritual, emotional, physical, and the other one.
It's the one you got to work on, Nick.
What is the other one?
The one you don't know is the one you got to work on.
What is that?
Did you say it? You said spiritual,
what
physical,
I'm embarrassing myself,
emotional, though. Intellectual.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one I need to work on as a PhD student. That's why I'm still in school. You know, people told me to stay in school. I kind of took that a little too far. This is like my 10th year of post-secondary. But it reminds me of that, you know, focusing on everything, not just, you know, sitting down in the classroom. And
So you had mentioned earlier in this interview that you're feeling maybe burnt out. What does a Vanier Award-winning PhD scholar do to deal with burnout? What is your go-to move?
I really like just spending time with my the track and field team here. You know, they're great athletes, and you know, they've kept me in school since my undergrad, I guess. And it's so freeing to be able to run with them after school and
Oh, wait. Are you those goofballs that are running outside in all kinds of weather and those tight pants and everything?
Totally. Yep.
Those are you guys.
That's us.
I've seen you guys running by on the golf course and whatnot out there. Just zipping by in snow and rain and 30-degree heat.
Yeah, I'm usually like way out the back.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll see them. You'll see them pass you by. Then you'll see the snails in the park pass you by. Then they'll be me.
Yeah,
so.
Then there's you, the caboose, eh? Yeah. Well, somebody's got to be last.
Yeah.
Exactly. I ask all my guests this as a way of cutting you loose, Nick. Who are you reading right now? Do you have an indigenous intellectual crust that you got your eye on? Who are you reading? Who's on your desk at this point?
Right now, it would be, well, you know, recently has been nothing because I've been busy doing other things. I get myself involved in a little too much. But a lot of the readings I've done have been in actually Dr. LaRocque's class.
Emma. You know,
yeah, yeah. So a lot there. And, you know, Janice Forsyth is another author who, you know, I see her name everywhere. And, of course, Joni's stuff, I just loved reading that. And the positive youth development literature, because that relates to my project, mm-hmm. too. So that's Alicia's work. So
yeah. I got to know Janice when I worked at the University of Western Ontario. She's pretty righteous. Okay. Yeah, Emma LaRocque has been named before as Indigenous Intellectual Crush Show. I wonder if Emma's writing a book. If she's writing a book, I'll get her on here and I'll chat her up about growing up in Northern Alberta, being a Franco Métis superstar.
Yeah, yeah, she has some great stories and definitely someone who I just love learning from. And Joni and Alicia, too. It's so good to be able to make these connections here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Nick, I appreciate you taking the time to drop by the UMFM studios and for all that you do in Indigenous sport development, Indigenous research methodology, and practicing two-eyed seeing as an ally in this journey towards a reconciled university. Just appreciate your knowledge and appreciate your contributions.
All right. Yeah, no problem. Thanks very much.
At the Edge of Canada is produced at the UMFM studios on the University of Manitoba campus in Winnipeg, Manitoba. The University of Manitoba is situated on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, the Cree, the Oji-Cree, the Dakota, and the Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. You can get all updated podcasts and live streams for At the Edge of Canada at umfm.com, or you can listen to us live on the UMFM app. The lead track is Nehewak Starlight. And if you like what you hear from me, you can follow me on Twitter at tfillers. Up next, your campus today. I went and stuck my neck out there. Oh,